Good evening, it's 6:30. Tonight, WKMS News teams up with the nonprofit, nonpartisan group Kentucky Youth Advocates. We'll hear about challenges facing Kentucky's youth and how state lawmakers can help Kentucky's children through legislation during this upcoming General Assembly. This is Front Page PM from WKMS News. I'm Chad Lampe. Front Page PM is our Friday evening news magazine, taking time to talk with our area leaders and dig into issues in our region. This week, we're digging into issues affecting education and Kentucky's youth ahead of the January legislative session. This morning on Front Page AM at 8:35, we talked with Murray State President Dr. Randy Dunn about state funding for Kentucky's universities and colleges. Tonight, we dig into K-12 issues with Kentucky Senate Education Committee Chairman Dr. Ken Winters and the Executive Director of Kentucky Youth Advocates, Terry Brooks. Again, KYA is a nonpartisan, nonprofit children's advocacy organization. This conversation was recorded last week in Murray as part of a KYA Step Up for Kids regional event. I served as the moderator for the discussion. Senator Winters and Executive Director Terry Brooks, thanks very much for having me here. Let's go ahead and begin a conversation about legislation to benefit Kentucky's youth. And this is a piece of legislation that's been brought forth by the First Lady, Jane Beshear, a couple of times about increasing the dropout age from age 16 to 18. Last year, Senator Winters, you were quoted by the Associated Press as saying that Senate Republicans felt like this bill in particular would be an unfunded mandate. So my question is to you, what are your thoughts about increasing the dropout age?
One thing that I'd be strongly supportive of is having appropriate alternative education programs for young people. And we don't have that now. We have a hodgepodge. We have some schools that are doing a wonderful job with alternative education experiences. We have some that have a semi-incarceration of them in a building off campus somewhere. And the bill that came up last year had an enhancement of the alternative school programs and increased the dropout age. We have found very little evidence that would point to the fact that raising the dropout age to 18 would enhance or would do what we're advocating by doing that. So, number one, those two issues ought to be separated so we could deal with alternative programs in one bill, and then if it's necessary at some point deal with the others. But talking about the dropout age, in 9-10, the age of the largest number of dropouts that year, the last year I have data on, was, guess what, 18. It wasn't 16. There was a great number of 17s, and there was some 16s, but that was the smallest number, 16-year-old. They could do it then. But why do you think the 18-year-old had not dropped out? You know they planned to. They didn't drop out until they're 18 because they would lose what? They'd lose their driver's license. You know, I didn't know enough about it. I thought, you mean we really enforce the dropout driver's license relationship? Absolutely. And they gave me figures on how many people that dropped out that year that lost their driver's license. So that's an issue to deal with. But if you look at the 15 states or so that have moved to 18-year-old dropouts, you find that about three of them have done slightly better than before. Some of them held about the same. The majority of them are doing poorer now than they did before they added that. And you know, if you have little Johnny or Mary, and by the way, I use those names, those are my generic kids. Little Johnny and little Mary can be terribly disruptive in a classroom if they don't want to be there. That's an issue that a lot of our people have difficulty with, creating, in the absence of funding for alternative schools, in the absence of funding for additional evaluations, in addition to facilities, all of those things add a dimension to this that has been difficult for the Senate to cope with that, because I think we give it a little more thought.
Terry, can you add anything from the Kentucky Youth Advocate stance?
Sure. We sort of had the road to Damascus experience on this because, candidly, a couple years ago, we were much more active in raising the age to 18, so I need to say that. I don't think we're against it, but I think that what I've learned as we've looked more and more is that we may be putting the cart before the horse. As Dr. Winters said, I think the real issue with dropouts in Kentucky are two issues, boredom and relevance. Kids who drop out are either bored out of their gourds or they don't find school meaningful. We're convinced there's a lack of accountability for the money, for achievement, for professional standards for teachers, for data tracking. It's really an environment where nobody owns it. So that's the first issue. The other thing that I've heard, Dr. Winters was being modest, some of his thinking around early college. We know that a shocking number of kids who drop out actually have done very well on tests. They scored proficient and distinguished the year before. What they figured out is that high school is boring. I can drop out, get my GED quickly, and then go to Murray. So we've got to be able to offer kids rigor while they're in school to keep them there. The other thing is one of Senator Winter's colleagues, Senator Westwood, I think has a very insightful perspective on what we need to be doing in technical and vocational education.
And let me mention Senator Westwood's bill that he's talking about. It's called Career Pathways is the title of the bill. The key element that makes it better than anything else for school dropouts is that it establishes career counselors, not guidance counselors, career counselors. Take Johnny. We've identified those that are running into trouble. There are potential dropouts. And he or she puts her arm around little Johnny or Mary and says, look, I was looking at some of your tests. It looks like you might have an interest in engineering, or you might have an interest in career and technical school kind of involvement, or let's look at what your interest might be and where you might go. You just can't walk up to them one day and do that and then walk off and say, Johnny's going to be a lot better because I've just inspired him. Well, it won't work like that. You got to continue to nurture and put, and we've got to work with them as though they were important. We all feel better if people think that we're important. And I even get puckered up when I talk about that. Excuse me.
Do you think there are any roadblocks for this bill if it's coming up this session?
Well, the roadblock to the Career Pathways bill is the same roadblock that would happen to massive infusion of money into alternative schools or some other tax incentives or whatever, is that we're looking at a tremendously challenging budget year. I know some of you have already read some data that look like we're probably at least $340 million in the red going into in the hole, in trying to have a balanced budget going in. And we're not out of this year alive yet either. But a lot of the great things that we want to do require money, and a lot of them will suffer. But I have the greatest interest and priority in that bill of Jack Westwood this time for more than one reason. It's the way to deal with dropouts. It's the way to move kids into areas where they feel good about themselves and feel good about working.
Terry Brooks with Kentucky Youth Advocates. Do you have anything to add?
I think Dr. Winters is right on target in terms of the voc tech cost and more money. I think some of Dr. Winters' own very innovative ideas around early college probably would cost money. We have a little bit of an unconventional view that the K-12 community does not agree with. I think there's a ton of money for alternative programs if we were smart about doing it. An investigation of alternative programs would reveal that there's money that goes to the Justice Cabinet, there's money that goes to the Cabinet for Health and Family Services. There are two totally separate entities that sit at Eastern Kentucky University that get a lot of money around alternative programs, and the Kentucky Department of Education gets money. What no one has done is, and I don't know if that's the legislator's job, the state auditor's job, the governor's job, no one has sat down and said, let's put all the money on the table. Let's not allow you to pigeonhole a little money here at Richmond, Kentucky, and a little bit of money over in Juvenile Justice, and a little bit money in the Capitol Plaza Tower where the Commissioner of Education sits. Let's put all that money on the table. let's break down those barriers and let's figure out how to best use money. I have a hunch that if we did that, it may not answer all the questions, but I have a feeling that there would be a lot of money on the table for quality alternative programs that is getting diverted into other places right now.
You're hearing a special conversation with Senate Education Committee Chairman Ken Winters and the Executive Director of Kentucky Youth Advocates, Terry Brooks. And we're here at a regional Step Up for Kids conference on the campus of Murray State University. Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about child safety. And this is among some of the blueprint items that the Kentucky Youth Advocates have listed as priorities for this legislative session. Reports indicate that Kentucky leads the nation in deaths from child abuse and neglect, and at least half of those deaths have come after the cases came to the attention of child welfare authorities. What can lawmakers do to try to help curb this?
We can do a great deal as far as legislative action to bring attention to it. I need to be more up to date on what the needs are there. There's no question that that's something that would trouble me immensely to think that that's happened to our young people. So I would stand committed to do everything that I could to assist in that area. I'm not knowledgeable enough to talk about the magnitude of the issue, but it's an unacceptable problem.
One of the areas that most troubles us around that is that the Cabinet for Health and Family Services is obligated by law to put out a report September 1. We're still waiting for that report. If you want to be cynical, people actually speculate that maybe it's being published just after the election. But I'm not aware of why a government entity doesn't have to obey the law. So at this point, we don't know what the landscape is for abuse and neglect in Kentucky because the data has not been released. So the one thing that I think the General Assembly can do is to enforce what's on the books. I hope that folks in health and welfare start asking hard questions as to where's the September 1 report. Folks who are experts in this area would say that one of the areas Kentucky lacks the most is what would be called early warning signals. A kid is in the system for abuse and neglect. The point we make is let's tackle that issue before a tragedy occurs. There are some things that we can do to set up early warning signals. Again, not budget busters, but better practices. So number one, I think the General Assembly should insist that the Cabinet obey the law. I don't think that's a novel idea. And then secondly, we can learn from looking at successful states that are very parallel to Kentucky about some early intervention that keeps kids from going from a crisis to being a fatality.
And again, other lawmakers were invited to be here today, and we thank you very much for making it a priority, Senator Winters. And recently, a state judge, at the behest of two state newspapers, the Herald Leader and the Courier Journal, ordered the state to release the records of child abuse deaths, saying that the Cabinet for Health and Family Services had no legal basis for withholding that information. My question is for you, and do you think, as a party too, where do you stand on instituting more oversight for the Cabinet?
I truly support more oversight, because if there ever was a need for transparency in what we're doing, it's today. But I'd feel the same thing about whether it's Department of Education or whether it's the Senate or the House of Representatives. Let me use an example. If the Constitution says that neither chamber of the General Assembly can adjourn sine die without the agreement of the other chamber, and to have that violated during the last session is very, very troubling to me, because the Constitution was violated. I have a list of every agency that's to report to my committee during the summer, and therefore my people or I will talk to them to make sure that they are ready to do that. So it's up to us to make it happen, you know, and I think we derelict in our duties if we don't accomplish that.
Coming up, we continue our special report from the Kentucky Youth Advocates Regional Step Up for Kids Conference with Senator Ken Winters and KYA Director Terry Brooks. The conference was held here at Murray State last week. After the break, we look into juvenile incarceration rates and the likelihood of changing the state's tax structure. This is Front Page PM from WKMS News. You're listening to Front Page PM. I'm Chad Lampe. We continue with our conversation with Senate Education Committee Chairman Ken Winters of Murray and Kentucky Youth Advocates Executive Director Terry Brooks. This conversation was recorded as part of the KYA's Regional Step Up for Kids Conference held last week at Murray State. Let's begin the second segment now, Senator Winters, in conversation about juvenile justice. In an editorial from the Lexington Herald Leader, Kentucky locked up almost 2,000 juveniles who committed status offenses such as truancy or running away, alongside violent juveniles and those who had committed serious crimes. Now, some would say that this paves the way for reoffending. So, last session, Representative Kelly Flood proposed a bill to curb the incarceration rate to utilize less punitive measures. That bill didn't make it out of the Senate Judiciary Committee, however, it did pass through the House. What do you feel was the impasse?
Well, I understand what the impact is, in fact, but that bill did not come to me, so I wasn't totally versed on it during that session. But I see the magnitude of the problem, and if we continued to incarcerate young people for some of the things that I know that takes them in that direction, we're probably doing more damage to that young person's mind and their future than if we had just ignored it. We have to have something other than putting them in with maybe even a felon incarceration for 4 days or whatever it is. So we must deal with that issue. I don't have recollection of her bill precisely, but I would support an initiative that would do something to eliminate the potential for that minimal kind of problem.
What would you be behind? What kind of change in the process?
Before I came down that, I would try to see what other states are doing, what people or practitioners would recommend to us. I don't have a preconceived idea on the best way to handle that.
Terry Brooks, do you have anything to add?
We really have hope that I think one of the real wins last year was that the House and Senate worked together on prison reform for adults. We think the same thinking that went into that, which was let's call a spade, let's make sure for adults we understand who have committed minor offenses and who have committed major offenses. We want that same logic applied to kids. When we look at the data, for instance, the one that blows me away, more kids are locked up for truancy than for any other status offense. Well, I don't understand that. I don't understand why some school districts have effective truancy diversion programs, how judges work with principals who work with families to get kids to school, while other school districts simply put them in the sheriff's car and drive them 10 counties away to lock them up. I haven't figured out how that gets kids to school. So I think this is common sense. It's not asking for more money. Again, it's saying the way we're doing it now costs more money than better policy. So I think there's some real pragmatic ways that we could start moving the needle. I think the other thing that Dr. Winters mentioned, which is right on target, is we would never put an adult misdemeanor offender in a cell with an adult felon. We would never do that. But we do that with kids. And my hunch is that those status offenders don't influence the more violent offenders, but the more violent young people unfortunately influence them. So we're not only not serving them now, I think we're probably buying a peck of trouble for the future.
You're hearing a special conversation with Senate Education Committee Chairman Ken Winters and the Executive Director of Kentucky Youth Advocates, Terry Brooks. And we're here at a Regional Step Up for Kids conference on the campus of Murray State University. And let's talk about the overarching issue of money. That's always a concern when, you know, working on in a budget cycle. And Senator Williams ran on his jobs plan and on his other economic plans, if you were elected governor, would be to change the tax structure. And there was some support behind that idea. Do you get the sense that Kentucky's tax structure will change, or there will be movement toward that in this session?
Well, I can assure you that there will be a movement in that direction, but I can't assure you it will be accomplished. Indeed, for the 7 years I've been there, I have advocated that we must do something about our tax structure. You know, we're basically a service society now, not a manufacturing, which I regret that we don't have. We've lost a lot of manufacturing, but certainly we need to look at that. And as you pointed out the recommendation from David Williams. We presented that bill last year and passed it out of the Senate the first week of the session. And it would have taken away the state income tax, the corporate tax, then it would use more of a consumption type tax, but broadening the consumption, not saying add it to medicines or groceries, but there's a lot of places that are not taxed at all. But there's so many, many facets to a comprehensive tax reform bill that we don't have time to talk about all of them now, but I can assure you there will be a move in that direction. Many of you looked at the proposal that President Williams had, and that was only one of the components. And I can assure you that virtually all of those initiatives we will try to generate out of our chamber, at least this time. The tax structure is just unfair now. But the governor has made a comment that he does not see that it's appropriate to tinker with the tax structure during a turndown in the economy like we have now. So it would be tough to get it out, but life is tough. And we won't hesitate to move forward with it because of the fact that it might, even if it got out of the House, it might not make it through the signature component over there. But we will be looking at that, and we'll be looking at other areas in that regard too that is part of the plan for the future of Kentucky that we've been talking about for several months now.
And a possibility of an earned income tax credit?
Earned income tax credit, I think, has great potential. I think, along with some of the elements of legislation we have coming, we'll have fairly tough sledding during this session because of the economy.
And my last question, you had mentioned earlier that you had, you've pre-filed some bills, some dealing with education and some not. What is your agenda? What are some bills that you've pre-filed that you'd like to get passed this session?
There's a number of bills, but let me talk about a bill that I ran last year also, and that's the early graduation bill. And that bill would require all of the requirements for high school graduation plus a few electives, not as many electives as another, if a student would have had if they stayed for 4 years in high school. But my thinking is, you've heard the term the lost senior year. Well, it's during that lost senior year that many of our young people get disillusioned and frustrated and they kind of lose their focus. For a student on this bill, a student and their parents would have to sign a letter, not binding, but a letter saying, we would like to participate in an early graduation as a ninth grader as they come into school. And then they would accelerate. But here's the key to that. My goal is that they do not reach that point where they're doing nothing for a year. The thing that would discourage them to participate, it won't be a large number, because what they will have done is say, well, I forfeit my last year of football or basketball or baseball or band or whatever that extracurricular activity is by doing this, but some will want to do it in order to get on with their life, get on into college, and in order to help them with that regard. If a student drops out of school, their SEEK formula money that would have gone to the school the next year does not go there, obviously. If they graduate early, that SEEK money does not go to the school because they're no longer there. In this bill, it would allow that money to be put into a trust fund, not available to the student until they entered college the next fall. It would pay basically what the tuition for the community technical college is now, and it would go a long way to paying the tuition for the first year at a regional university like Murray State. But my goal is to keep them occupied, keep their mind sharp, keep them geared toward the future, and give them an incentive to do that. There's no doubt there will be a charter school bill again. There'll be bills coming out of the House, and then I know there'll be a bill in the Senate, too, that deals with volunteer charter schools, not mandatory charter schools. There's a bill that deal with neighborhood schools, and that's a term that you heard already. And I have a bill also, personally this time, that would be called a public-to-public school choice bill. has nothing to do with going to private schools or giving vouchers to go to a private school, but a public school choice bill. Let's just say we've got a single parent, male or female, with a couple of kids or maybe just one child, and they live in Murray, Kentucky, but they work in Hopkinsville. Now, if this kid's in school, they have to make arrangements for preschool and after school babysitting. If they're not in school, they've got an all-day expense factor there. Now, is something going to happen in school to little Johnny or Mary? It's when something is going to happen in school, and one of them will get hurt or get sick, and I'm going to have to get to them, and they're an hour and a half or an hour and 15 minutes away. Why don't we make a provision if there's a vacancy in a school in Christian County or Hopkinsville system? Why would we not allow that young person to go over there? The resident district would not be responsible for transportation. And I'm working out the details on, they wouldn't have to relinquish their capital outlay money they get on behalf of that student. And we might even look at a part of the SEEK formula staying with the host or the resident, not the host district, in order to make sure everybody is comfortable with it. But what a asset that would provide to moms and dads that have to work away from. They don't have a spouse at home that can take care of the kids. So we need something to allow that to happen, and that's a bill that they'll be running this time too. And there's a couple of others that are more controversial than those, and I will reserve the right to introduce those after I've assessed what the total impact might be of those.
Part of the conversation with Senator Ken Winters and Executive Director of KYA Terry Brooks centered around the KYA's Blueprint for Kentucky Youth. You can find a link to that information and background along with this entire conversation at WKMS.org. This has been Front Page PM, our new regional news segment following Marketplace at 6:30 on Fridays. You may have missed Front Page AM today at 8:35, a regular feature during Morning Edition. If you'd like to hear these or any of our stories, you can find them online anytime at WKMS.org. You can also catch us this Sunday morning at 9 for our hour-long Front Page Sunday. I'm Chad Lampe. Thanks for being with us.